As Guy mentioned, I'm on the faculty at Carnegie Mellon University. My colleague Rahul Talang and I do a lot of research on how technology is changing the entertainment industries broadly. So we do a lot of work on pricing, we do a lot of work on windowing. What I want to talk to you today about is a good deal of work we've done on piracy, both the impact of piracy on the business and then what can be done about piracy to lessen the impact on the industry. A lot of this research is done through a research center I co-direct called the Initiative for Digital Entertainment Analytics, which receives both funding and research partnership from the six studios. So if you're here from one of the big six studios, let me say a hearty thank you for the help and partnership. All right? Cool. And I'm keenly aware of two things. Number one, I have 25 minutes. And number two, I'm up against lunch. And I guess the last thing anyone wants to hear from is a professor right before lunch. So I'm going to try to go quickly. Everything I'm going to talk about today has a more detailed academic paper sitting behind it. So if you're interested or bored or have trouble going to sleep at night, feel free to send me an email, and I'd be more than happy to send you the more detailed research we're going to be doing. So let me look at three questions. First, what does the academic literature say about does piracy have an impact on producers? Second, what does the academic literature say about does piracy have an impact on consumers? And then third, and where I think I'll focus most of our time, is what does the academic literature say about are anti-piracy initiatives at all helpful at changing consumer behavior? Okay? So does piracy have an impact on producers? In many ways, I'm embarrassed to still be talking about this question. We've talked about this a lot. The reason I'm talking about this is because people continue to say really stupid things about this. So this was Newsweek a couple months ago looking at Fast and Furious 8 and noting that there was a bunch of piracy that came out very quickly after Fast and Furious 8. So pirated copies of Fast 8 raced to the internet Friday, the day after the movie's global release. Universal's box office haul hasn't been dampened by illegal downloads. However, Fast 8 had the biggest global debut of any of the films in the action series, right? Now, if you've had any statistical training at all, this should make your skin crawl. Because the fact that a popular movie is both popular on piracy and popular in the theaters tells you nothing about whether piracy had any impact on theatrical revenue. To do that, you've got to do a whole bunch more in terms of the statistics to try to disentangle the popularity of the movie from the impact of piracy. And it turns out when you do that, what you find is piracy has a huge negative impact on sales. So this is a paper my colleagues and I wrote on the impact of pre-release piracy. And what we found, and this was published in an academic journal, what we found is that pre-release piracy, on average, causes about a 19.1% drop in box office revenue relative to what you would have had if the piracy had been delayed. And this isn't the only paper on this subject. So my colleague and I wrote a book last year called Streaming, Sharing, Stealing, Big Data and the Future of Entertainment that is about broadly, again, how technology is changing the entertainment industry. We just covered our advance. So every copy that sells from here on out, I get $1.17. I have three kids to put through college, so feel free to buy aggressively. But in chapter 5 of this book, we talk about the impact of piracy, and we point out that there are three peer-reviewed published papers that looked at this question and found no impact of piracy on sales. If you're following the design of the slide, what you'll realize is that on the other side of the ledger, there are 22 peer-reviewed academic publications that find a statistically and economically significant harm from the impact of piracy. This is about as close as you're going to get to a consensus on this sort of complicated question in the academic literature. 22 out of 25 peer-reviewed papers finding the same thing is very close to a consensus on this sort of a complicated question. The thing we point out in the book, however, is this actually underplays the harm from piracy, because piracy gets at the very heart of every single one of the creative industry's business models. Every single one of the creative industry's business models are based on what economists call price discrimination, or the ability to control when and in what format and at what quality consumers get access to the content. So you can either watch it in the theaters at a high price, or you can wait 3 months and watch it on DVD as many times as you want, or you can wait a year after that and watch it on HBO, blah, blah, blah. Those business models only work if I can control when and in what format and at what time you get access to the content. Piracy takes all that away. So it's not only that piracy hurts sales, it blows up or significantly weakens all of the industry's existing business models. Question two, does piracy harm consumers? So a lot of people, if you read Torrent Freak, and shame on you, but if a lot of people on Torrent Freak will argue, well, this is just a wealth transfer, right? The studios are worse off, but consumers are better off because I'm getting stuff for free. And as a first order effect, they're right. But as a second order effect, if because producers are making less money, they stop making things, then both producers and consumers are worse off. Does that make sense? Proving that in the data is really hard. So a colleague of mine at the University of Minnesota, Joel Waldfogel, wrote a paper trying to look at what happened to the quality of music after Napster was released. And I won't go into the details of the paper, but basically what he found is there was no change in the quality of music because of the lift in piracy after Napster. Now, what he's keenly aware of, however, is Napster wasn't the only thing that changed in the 2000s. There was Napster, but there were also a whole bunch of other technological shifts that might have made it easier to make music or distribute music or make money off of music. What you'd really like to have is a situation where piracy comes into play, but there are no other technological shifts that change the ability to make music. Or other entertainment goods. So what Joel did with my colleague Rahul is they looked at this in the context of Bollywood movies. So in Bollywood in the 1980s, the VCR was introduced, and my colleague Rahul was growing up in India during this time frame, and what he says is that once the VCR was introduced, all of a sudden there were a whole bunch of informal theaters that grew up where a guy with a VCR and a projector, you could come in and watch movies, you know, and the Bollywood studios wouldn't get paid. So here's a situation where piracy comes in, where there are no other significant changes in the ability to distribute content. And what they found is that in the 80s, let me see if I can point up here, yeah, prior to this, the number of movies being made in Bollywood seemed to be increasing. And then after the mid-80s, there was this huge drop in the number of movies produced by Bollywood. And then the other fun thing is prior to the 80s, you know, the quality, at least measured by IMDb, was fairly stable. And then after the 80s, there's this significant drop in the IMDb ratings for the remaining movies that did get made in Bollywood. And what they're arguing is this is at least tentative evidence that when studios can make less money from their movies, they also make fewer movies, and in some sense, the quality of what gets made goes down. If that's true, then it's bad for both producers and consumers. And another colleague of mine and I have a paper that's coming out in the next couple months in the George Mason University Law Review that makes a similar argument about Academy Award-winning movies. We've seen a drop in the number of Academy Award-winning movies coming out of high piracy countries relative to lower piracy countries. All this to say, I think there's good reason to believe that piracy hurts both producers and consumers. So that brings us to the question I suspect you're all interested in, I know I am. Can anti-piracy initiatives help? And here we get to a whole bunch of people in the public who would argue anti-piracy initiatives are never going to be effective. You're never going to be able to shut down piracy. People are always going to be able to find this stuff. Therefore, you should just stop trying and do something else. And this is, you know, an example of this, Nick Bilton in The Times talking about this. I would argue the problem with this argument is it ignores something that marketers have known about consumers forever, and that is consumers are much lazier than any of us expected them to be. So maybe if we can make consuming piracy a little bit harder, they'll switch over to something else. Again, good theory, can you see it in the data? So for the past, about five or six years ago, my colleague and I looked at this and said, we're business school professors, we're not particularly creative, let's do a two by two here. Let's think about anti-piracy initiatives as either affecting the demand side, people who are consuming the piracy, or the supply side, people who are supplying the piracy. And then let's look at anti-piracy initiatives as either those focused on government-mandated efforts or industry cooperation. And let's see if we can find examples in each of these four boxes of initiatives and measure whether they've been effective or not. And so far, we've done three of the four boxes. We're currently working on box number four. And so if you ask me again in 6 months, and I hope we'll have an answer here. But I just wanted to quickly walk through the evidence on each of these boxes. So let's start with a demand-side government-mandated program. So this is the ADOPI law in France. People familiar with the ADOPI law? So the ADOPI law was a three strikes law. So it basically said the government's going to set up a board that will monitor copyright complaints. And when I catch Drew pirating once, I'm going to send him a nasty email. And if I catch him pirating again, I'm going to send him a registered letter. And if I catch him pirating a third time, I can take him to court and fine him. All right. And so the question is this going to have any impact on Drew's behavior? So what we did here is, the nice thing about this is it impacted France, but it didn't impact other countries. So we got iTunes sales data from the three big record labels in France and in a control group of countries. And we compared sales in those two. And what you see is there's a big uplift in sales in France relative to the control group that's in blue, which translates to about a 20 to 25% increase in sales after this program was discussed in the media. The other fun thing about this is you might argue that if this is causal, it should affect more heavily pirated genres more than less heavily pirated genres. Right? So there was a survey done that showed that rap, rock, and pop were the most heavily pirated genres at the time, and Christian, classical, folk, and jazz were the least heavily pirated genres. And it turns out if you look at this, the increase in sales is far larger for rap than it is for rock and pop, and far larger for rock and pop than it is for Christian, classical, folk, and jazz. So just as we expected, Drew, our pirate, is more likely to consume rap and rock and pop. He agrees with me. And that's where we see the increase in sales concentrated. So here's another example, the shutdown of Mega Upload. Now, Mega Upload, unlike Adobe in France, which only affected French consumers, Mega Upload was shut down worldwide. If the Department of Justice had come to me and asked, I would have encouraged them to shut it down randomly in different countries over time. Surprisingly, they didn't come to us and ask this. So this presents a more complicated question for us. What we did here, though, is one of the nice things is that Mega Upload was used more in some countries than other countries. Mega Upload was more popular in Spain, for example, than it was in the United States. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to compare, after Mega Upload is shut down, do we see a bigger increase in sales in countries that used Mega Upload more than in countries that used Mega Upload less? And the answer is yes. That if you look at this change in sales, it looks like there's a relationship here. And in fact, if you back out that relationship, what it says is that shutting down Mega Upload caused about a 7 to 9% increase in legal digital sales of movies worldwide. Two interesting facts here. Number one is this isn't only Mega Upload. A whole bunch of other sites shut their doors after Mega Upload. But it also wasn't perfect. You could still find piracy online. It just made it a little bit harder for you to do so. Two more I want to show you. Site blocking. It says this isn't going to be effective. Anybody who knows how to use a VPN is able to get around this. The site doesn't actually leave the internet. Why are you bothering us with this? So what we wanted to do was try to measure this. We're going to look at this in the context of the UK. So the UK started this in 2010. Their first site was the Pirate Bay in May 12. Then they blocked 19 sites, and then they blocked 53 sites. So what we've got are data from a panel tracking company that allows us to break the number of visits you made to a blocked site prior to the site being blocked, and then we can watch what happens to your behavior after that occurs. And what we see in the data is when the Pirate Bay was blocked, there wasn't a whole lot of change in visits to legal sites. There was a big increase in visits to other pirate sites, and there was a big increase in visits to sites providing VPN services. Right? So this was not effective at changing consumers' behavior. And this finding is actually very similar to what other researchers have found with the shutdown of Kino in Germany and also with the shutdown of the Pirate Bay in the Netherlands. Shutting down the biggest site in the country doesn't seem to have a big impact on consumer behavior. What's interesting, though, is if you go and you look at the 19-site block and then the 53-site block, that's when you start to have a change. So when the next 19 most popular sites are blocked, we see about a 12% increase in visits to legal streaming sites. And then when 53 sites are blocked, we see an additional 6% increase in visits to legal paid sites and a 10% increase in ad-supported sites. And again, I think what this is saying is that if I'm a pirate, if I'm Drew, I know a whole bunch of sites that I can use. If you shut down my favorite, I'm probably going to go to one of the others. But if you shut down enough of these sites, make it sufficiently hard for me to find the stuff I want, eventually I'm going to switch over to paid services. So these blocking measures might not be effective as a one-off, but as a more comprehensive measure, I think the data does say that they will be effective. All right, last one, and in some ways the most fun one, Google. So a voluntary initiative by Google to downrank pirate sites, will that be at all effective? So, and I apologize, these slides are a little bit old, but when we started doing this study, the question was, when you go to Google and search on Captain Phillips download, this is what you see. Would your behavior change at all if instead of having two pirate sites in the top, I replaced those with legal sites? Okay. How do you do this? Well, it's really hard. You can call Google as much as you want. They're not going to let you do an experiment. It's also very intertwined. You know, what Google displays is very closely related to what you search on. So it's hard to do this in any sort of a natural experiment. What we decided to do is run a lab experiment, okay? Why might you think this is not going to change people's behavior? Again, if Drew wants to pirate, even if he can't find his stuff on the first page, he's going to keep searching, or you could make that argument, and many sites have. What we wanted to do is test that. So we conducted an experiment in three phases. In the first phase, we brought people into a lab and we said, are you interested in consuming any of this list of movies? If they said they were, we said, great, we'd like for you to participate in our experiment. We'd like for you to go get that movie online. But instead of using your normal search engine, we'd like for you to use our search engine, which we call Research. We spent a long time coming up with this logo. We're pretty proud of it. And what happens when you go to Research is we divided the users into one of three control treatment conditions. So in the control condition, when you searched on something, you saw exactly what you would have seen on your favorite search engine that begins with G. In the legal treatment condition, we replaced all pirate links on the first page of results with legal links, and then we replaced any pirate links in the first three slots on subsequent pages with legal links. So you could still find pirate links. You just had to go to the second page and then scroll down. And then condition three was a piracy manipulation, where instead of making piracy harder to find, now we make legal links hard to find. So we remove all the legal links from the first page and all the legal links from the top three on subsequent pages. And if you buy the experimental setup, what you can do now is just compare what people did in the control condition to what they did in the legal treatment and the piracy treatment condition. And what you find is that when I make it harder to find pirated content and easier to find legal content, people are much more likely to consume legal than they were in the control condition. And when I make it easier to find pirated content and harder to find legal content, people are much more likely to pirate. The same person, Drew, when he has trouble finding legal, goes over to piracy, and when he has trouble finding piracy, goes over to legal. All right? Now, TechDirt. TechDirt says, fine. But this isn't going to apply to the sort of people who show up with an expressed preference for a particular type of content. Let's say Drew shows up and he says, you know, Captain Phillips free download or Captain Phillips torrent. That's not going to change his behavior. He's committed to piracy. He's going to look as long as he wants. And what's really cool is we can actually test that because we observe what people search on in our experiment. So we can look at just the people who showed up and said name of movie and a legal site or name of movie and a pirate site. And it turns out when you do that, what you find is that if you started saying name of movie and a legal domain or buy or rent, even there, when I make pirated content easier to find, your likelihood of purchasing goes way down. And the same is true if you showed up with infringing intent, which we had defined as including the word pirate, torrent, or free. In that case, if I make legal content easier to find, your likelihood of purchasing legal goes way up. All right? So the summary, which I don't know is, you know, all that, you know, surprising to anybody in here, but hopefully it's kind of fun to see it in the data, is pirates behave exactly like what we know consumers behave. If you make it a little bit harder for them to do something, they'll do less of it. And if you make it a little bit easier for them to do something, they'll do more of that. And I hope that's a message that you can all take back to your organizations as we start to think about how to protect content. And Guy, you're about to tell me we have
tons of time.
Excellent.
So do you want to do some questions? Oh, sorry, Harry. Jesus.
Love to. And I should say I've presented this in a variety of contexts, so I'm not. I don't mind being yelled at. If you want to yell at me, that's fine.
No yelling here. No yelling, Glenn.
Hi, this is Glenn from SoftServe. This is great research. Have you done the inflection point where the pivot says, from the economic standpoint, now the pirate incentive is no longer there? Have you figured that there's got to be an inflection point of which paid versus not? Because it happened in the media industry for traditional newsprint and magazines. There must be something similar in this industry as well.
Yeah. Let me make sure I understand the question. So at what point does a customer switch from doing A to doing B? The problem is that point is going to be different across different customers. So what we can see in the data is that, you know, again, when I make Drew, do you mind me picking on you? All right.
Poor Drew.
When I make it, you know, when I take the content off of the front page and the first three links, that some people, like Drew, switch their behavior. Not everybody, but some. Would it be different if I, you know, removed just half the links off the first page? Probably.
So there's...
Yeah, we could put them into cohorts and measure the different treatment effects. Go ahead, Guy.
We got another question here in the back. I didn't know what we were moving on.
Yeah, does that so
yeah,
it's... Yeah.
Well, bear in mind also it's a research project that's not necessarily out native in the wild, right?
So are you talking about making it available on legal channels?
No.
Okay. You're just talking about setting kind of the demand curve, the reverse of the demand curve for piracy. Yeah, I think you could trace that out.
I got another question here in the back.
Hi, I'm Ken. I'm an intern. I'm in college, and you know, a lot of my...
You're about to confess something, aren't you?
No, I was going to say a lot of my friends pirate content. But I find this research very fascinating. I'm a, you know, strong believer of that when people are informed, you know, they'll make better decisions. So do you think if, you know, maybe people, especially younger people who are, you know, more susceptible to pirating, if they saw this research and saw that this, like, this actually hurts you when you pirate stuff? Do you think that would affect it, or is it not tangible enough? I always think about, like, smoking, like, kids, you know, smoking isn't really cool anymore, and we know that it's bad for us, so we don't really do
it. This is your brain on piracy?
Yeah, I wonder, well, I don't pirate things because I don't like the quality of it. I mean, I'm, like, really nitpicky, so, like, I don't pirate music and stuff because I like buying it for the good quality. But that's just me.
The example I can think of is the Adobe law. We actually saw the shift in behavior before the law ever went into effect and before people actually received notices. The shift in behavior occurred when the law was being discussed in the press. Now, that's sort of loosely consistent with what you're saying, is that when people understand there's a problem here and, by the way, I could get caught, that's when they change their behavior.
Another question. Oh, Al,
sir?
What'd you say?
And yet Adobe.
So go ahead.
Hold on. I'm getting like my...
The status of it now.
Oh, it's gone.
Yes. So right. I think that's really important to talk about, too, that it seemed like it could have worked, was working, and yet now it's no longer there.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. You're absolutely right. And actually, a lot of this research says that there's a change in people's behavior, but if people don't see the enforcement actually happen, they can drift back towards their old behavior, as you'd expect. Thanks, Al.
One more question. So it's exactly on these notes here. So you were talking about blocking the sites and the deterrent of the Adobe law and so on. So, but have you looked into how efficient it is if there's a law as a deterrent, or if it's just kind of the nice notch of having not getting access to it easily? Because blocking is not getting access to it. It's right. Not kind of a deterrent. It's just annoying, right?
Right.
Whereas the Adobe is actually a deterrent. So have you looked into, okay, so if we do the blockings, we'll get this effect, and if we add the deterrent on top of that, we'll get an additional effect?
No, and I don't know of a good setting to do that, right? I can tell you that the deterrent is effective in France in 2011, and I can tell you that the blocking is effective in the UK in 2014, but I don't have a good way of comparing the two, you know, France 11, what you'd ideally have is a setting where we enact a three strikes law, and then on top of that, we add a blocking law. And
you have the blocking in the UK, but you're also going to have the deterrent now with the new changes of legislation there as well. So maybe
that's true, actually. And we're looking at the notice sending in the UK,
because then you can see if your numbers changes there, then you will have it. Yeah,
that's a fair point. Yeah. That's a fair point.
Any other questions? Oh, here we go, Peter.
So have you looked at anything around discoverability of the content? So I want to watch something. I want to watch it legally.
Yep.
I can't find some place where either I have an account or it's easy for me to get to, or the studio windowing is such that it's not available online yet.
Yep.
Yet I can still get it through a pirate site, yep, should I choose to. So have you looked at anything around that dynamic?
Yeah, I think two examples. One is the Google search example, right? I search on Google and it's tougher to find. It's tougher to find legal, I switch over to piracy. The other thing we have is, and I apologize to anybody who's here from NBCU, but when...
the gentleman asking the question.
I apologize.
Sorry,
to Peter.
Peter.
We have a paper that showed when you took your content off of iTunes, there was a big increase in your piracy. So people who were cheerfully buying on iTunes, when they couldn't get it anymore, they didn't go to Amazon, they didn't buy it on DVD, they shifted over to piracy. We have another paper that shows that when ABC added their content to Hulu, there was a big drop in their piracy. And a third paper that shows that when an anonymous studio added some of their catalog movies to iTunes, there was a drop in piracy on those catalog movies. What's fun about the first two papers is it's not only that NBC piracy went up relative to ABC, CBS, and Fox, there was also an increase in ABC, CBS, and Fox piracy. Almost like once Drew learns how to use BitTorrent to pirate his NBC stuff, he's more likely to steal his ABC, CBS, and Fox stuff. So there's this spillover effect. And if I can take two more minutes. I mean, what's fun is we were presenting this to our faculty, and we thought we found this really cool empirical effect where there's this spillover effect of piracy onto other people. And we've got this very senior criminologist on his on our faculty, and he raises his hand. And he goes, you know what? Criminologists have known this for years. The first crime you commit is the hardest one, and after that, it's much easier to commit the second crime. So anyway, took some of the wind out of our sails. Yeah, I should have said that. It helps, except for the parts where it hurts, right? And if you caught the tautology there, you're right. It helps reduce piracy, but it also makes it harder for you to make money, right? So I think you've got to weigh those two things. Yes, lowering price is going to cause some people who would have otherwise pirated to switch over, but it's also going to lower your price. Shortening the window is going to cause some people to switch over, but it's also going to make it harder to segment people in your normal price discrimination strategies.
The argument is that you are going to increase the market size.
You're going to increase the market size. You might increase loyalty. I'll also say we've got a paper that argues empirically. We actually worked with the studio to run randomized experiments where we lowered prices on some of their content. Prices on iTunes are, you would make more money if you lowered your prices on iTunes in general. And non-trivial amounts more money. The price that you charge for a DVD is not the right price to charge on iTunes, at least according to the data.
Fascinating.
All right.
Time for one more.
I'll stick around for lunch if anybody does want to yell at me. Maybe Drew.
you owe Drew lunch, by the way. You need to buy Drew lunch.
Drew, your lunch is on me.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, Michael D. Smith. Thank you, Michael. Super appreciate that.